Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis, and it's like a heat wave out there today compared to 6 years ago.
Just 6 years ago, Bob. Who can forget? And good morning to you. We've had some cold spells recently, for sure. But if you think back to the barbaric cold of January 30th to 31st, 2019, there was a 50-hour stretch none of us can forget when the temperature didn't rise above negative 10. That wasn't the feels-like temperature. That was the actual temperature. Real temperatures hit 20 below in the city, 30 below in the western suburbs. It was unbearable. Negative 50 below wind chills. The state recorded its all-time low temperature of negative 38 below. Recall that the media nicknamed us Chiberia, and we were all over the national news at the time. It was colder in Chicago, Bob, as you may recall, than the South Pole, than Greenland, than the coldest parts of Alaska, or even areas north of the Arctic Circle at that time. And it was, all of us have our expressions about what it felt like to get out there and actually witness it. It was actually dangerous to, you know, just minutes were skin exposure were dangerous, they told us. And for the most part, Chicagoans really heeded the warnings and didn't go outside. And it's not so often that the city really shuts down at all for being too cold, but it really did during that 50-hour window. Something strange happened, though, Bob, and this is the part I didn't remember so well. I don't know if you did, but after that extreme cold, during the polar vortex, there was this 70-degree temperature swing, and it felt like it was summer. So we pulled a clip from WGN TV talking about that dramatic weather period and temperature swing.
That's funny. I didn't remember that. Yeah, we were talking the other day about the great blizzard of 67 when it was 65 degrees the day before the blizzard. So we get those big swings here, don't we?
Right. And then you didn't have the weather tools, so that one caught us by surprise. This one, you know, just was a nice, pleasant way to come out of a really brutally cold period.
On January 29th of 2019, all the talk here was about Jussie Smollett. I can't believe it's been 7 years.
Yeah, 7 years since the most infamous non-crime in Chicago's history took place this week, 2019, as you say, Bob. The staged hate crime attack on Jussie Smollett. I'm not sure why they chose that brutal cold time to go through this whole thing and put this together, but maybe they didn't consult Tom Skilling before they got the plans together. But police said that Jussie Smollett hired the two brothers. Remember, he met on the set of Empire, paid him $3,500 each to carry out a fake hate crime. But the interesting part, if you go back and think about it, he wanted us to believe he was just trying to go out to get a Subway sandwich in 20 below weather in the middle of the night, and that he was brutally attacked by two guys in MAGA hats. Remember, he said they were roaming Streeterville and they were looking for him and somehow knew that he was out there, and they launched some homophobic slurs his way and racial slurs, and really it sounded like a horrible attack, throwing bleach on him and shouting, "This is MAGA country." But the whole thing just was too much to believe, and it started to unwrap. Like, it just, people were starting to poke holes in his story, and he was losing support. So what did he do? What did Jussie Smollett do at that time? He went on national news and gave a big tell-all interview. We pulled a clip from that.
There were so many things fishy about the whole case.
So many. Yeah, the most remarkable part, Bob, was that he never dropped the Subway sandwich. He still had it when he got back to his apartment and the police were interviewing him. He had that. I mean, it's just the whole thing. Then there was the sweet deal, of course, that he cut behind closed doors with Kim Fox, and no reporters were present in that courtroom. In the end, a special prosecutor did find him guilty of more than the original five counts of disorderly conduct, but the Illinois Supreme Court recently ruled that he couldn't be tried twice for the same crime. So maybe we're all happy that that whole chapter is just over behind
we
us.
Are. And now we turn to a Chicago suburb that made history this week back in 1982.
Yeah, thank God for this time, Bob. The village of Morton Grove made history when they enacted the first handgun ban. Morton Grove became the first municipality in the U.S. to make it illegal to own a handgun. You couldn't have one in your house. You couldn't have one at all anywhere in the village. So the very first day the ordinance went into effect, this week, 1982, TV crews and reporters from across the state camped out at the police department there. And they were waiting for people to turn in their guns, because showing that, you know, it's no longer legal to have them, so come on and bring them in. By the end of the day, I think they had 5 guns surrendered. I don't know if that's because no one owned a handgun in Morton Grove or if they just weren't turning them in. But what it really led to, though, was this national debate, really big national debate, about whether municipalities could enact these stricter gun laws that seemed to override state and federal laws. And it started this national controversy. In the end, there was political pressure on Morton Grove. There were lawsuits, including one from the National Rifle Association, claiming it was a violation of Second Amendment rights to block law-abiding citizens from having guns. And the village did hang on for years until 2008 with that ordinance, but then eventually repealed it, largely because of those lawsuits.
Mm-hmm. A huge controversy around the country. More This Week in Chicago History with Anna coming up. And I'll tell you, I can see the boys under the marquee right now. A little Siskel and Ebert history this morning. Anna?
That'll bring you back, huh, Bob? That jazzy theme music. It was the opening tune to Siskel and Ebert's show on WTTW back in the early 80s, and the open shows them kind of walking around the streets of Chicago, stepping out, people giving them a thumbs up everywhere they went. It was really sweet. Their show launched in 1975, and it was originally titled, Bob, I don't know if you remember this, Opening Soon at a Theater Near You. That's what it was called for just a couple years before they changed it to Sneak Previews, and then later Siskel and Ebert at the Movies and things like that. But they were two respected film critics, as you know already, just bantering about the movies on kind of a no-nonsense set, and it was such a hit. People loved to hear them, their rapport, what they had to say, their critiques. Sometimes people would wait to hear their what they said about a movie before they wanted to spend their hard-earned money on it. You know, like they wanted to hear what Siskel and Ebert had to say. And they became such household names and trusted figures. Mayor Daley, this week in 82, decided to give them their own honorary street sign in a prominent location at Erie and McClurg, so you can go check it out today. We pulled a clip, though. This is cool. From the early days, Siskel and Ebert. No fancy sets, low budget, everything, graphics and the lot, and just two guys in their checkered jackets sitting around talking about how they love movies and sitting on WTTW going back and forth about what they liked and what they didn't.
We loved their reviews, but we loved it when they got into a fight even more, didn't we?
Oh, the best. Even better than the two thumbs up was going after at each other like, oh, no, that's not it, Roger. And yeah. It was just some great memories of two really excellent film critics.
In February of 1981, all the talk around here was about tennis on the South Side, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of think about this, Bob. 1981, Martina Navratilova, then number one ranked tennis player, she came to Chicago to play in the Avon Tennis Championships, and that was held over at the Chicago Amphitheater. As you know, that was more of originally as a livestock show and, you know, rodeo place and things like, you know, really, really set around livestock from the early days of Chicago. So they turned it into a tennis tournament scene. Far from Wimbledon, they had to take the concrete floors and cover them with carpet and somehow made it ready for a big tournament. And the biggest star in tennis who came and 9,000 fans came out to watch her play. She already won Wimbledon twice at this point. She was 24 years old and a superstar. But it wasn't only her tennis that impressed the Chicago fans. I went back and looked up this what happened. She gave this interview after the match, which she won, by the way, and she had advice for the Bears. They were negotiating with Walter Payton at the time, and she heard about it, and she said in this big post-game interview, hey, Bears, give Walter Payton whatever he wants. Give him $1 million. He's the franchise. And the crowd roared and just loved what she had to say. And no word on whether the Bears took her word for it or took her advice on that, but they did hand him quite a nice contract long after that event.
I forgot about that. We talk a lot about Chicago's candy history, but we have a pretty interesting soda history around here, too, don't we?
So many big names, if you think about it, Bob. Green River, Canfield's, RC Cola, Dad's Root Beer, and then there was Orange Crush, which debuted this week, 1911. Pretty incredible. You go back and think all the names of soda that still exist today, many of them, but are, you know, became iconic brands. This was a big one because it was one of the first to go into national distribution. It was based in Evanston, and the founder, Neil C. Ward, was a chemist who put together this formula with real orange in it. The rest of them were not. And this was real orange and it had bits of pulp, and it was made it taste like you had just crushed a bunch of fresh oranges right into the bottle. So that's what he was trying to deliver. That's what he did deliver, and advertised around it, and people just loved it. So way before Fanta, way before Sprite, before 7-Up, there was only one real national citrus drink, and that was Orange Crush out of Evanston, Illinois.
And in Chicago, it is not soda, it's pop, right?
That's right. We got to call it that. Right. It's got to be pop. Of course, pop.